So over the last week, we've all, at some point or another, talked about how metta bhavana purifies and opens the mind and heart, and about the importance of balanced, friendly attitude about the process, that attitude that allows whatever has arisen in our experience to just be there, and cultivating metta anyway. And I know that all of you have been seeing this for yourselves in the practice directly. We feed what is wholesome and useful and refrain what leads to affliction, to suffering, those unskillful habits, latent tendencies, hindrances. And just continue to practice. Today I want to talk about all of this again in the context of effort and energy. Specifically, right effort as a limb of the Eightfold Path and the proper exertion of energy in support of that. So first, to talk about language, because it's important to understand what we're talking about. Effort versus energy versus striving versus diligence. Effort and energy, we use these words synonymously in English anyway, but they're actually different things, and we tend to conflate them, to confuse them with each other. What's wonderful about Pali is that it's a language that deals a lot with the mind and with meditation. So there are fine differences in different words. There are many different words for something in English we just use one word for. And it's the same with this. To us in English, energy, effort, striving, diligence, we all kind of lump them together. And the main important distinction here is the difference between effort and energy. In Pali, effort, there are three words that are different flavors but very similar to describe this: vayama, padana, paganha. And these are active. The root meaning of all of them is spreading out towards or reaching towards. Energy in Pali is very different. That's virya. And it's qualitative. The root meaning is vigor, strength, courage. And it's the main force that supports that reaching towards, that effort. And unlike many other mind states, such as metta, sati, other mind states that we evoke in the meditative process, the mental factor of energy is not universally wholesome. So it can fuel awakening insight, or quite the opposite. So vayama and virya, these are two words that most people are familiar with in the Pali. And these are what we've been talking about all along in our talks and in our instructions. So vayama, effort, comes into play when we talk about right effort as a limb of the Eightfold Path, The Pali is sama vayama. An effort that qualifies as quote unquote right effort is quite, there's quite a specific meaning of this term. It's not just our conventional meaning of effort. And it's the specific application of this in four parts. So the first is the effort to restrain or avoid unwholesome mind states or habits that are latent, that have not yet arisen. So, can you stay away from the gravitational field of your habits? So, the effort to restrain or avoid. The second is the effort to abandon unwholesome mind states or habits that have already arisen. Can you put them down? Can you reincline away from them? And then on the wholesome side, there's the effort to cultivate wholesome mind states or habits that have not arisen. So first, we restrain or abandon the unwholesome, and then we turn to the wholesome side and we cultivate wholesome mind states that are latent, that have not yet arisen. So this is, of course, what we're doing here in the metta practice. So can you keep starting again to cultivate metta? And then finally, the fourth limb of right effort is the effort to maintain wholesome mind states or habits that have already arisen. So in other words, can you cultivate continuity? So the effort to restrain latent unwholesome tendencies and abandon arisen ones, the effort to cultivate latent wholesome qualities and maintain the ones that have already arisen. And this is exactly what we've been doing here as we return to the metta again and again and again and again. It's what we mean when we talk about feeding the wholesome, starving the unwholesome. And this does take the application of energy and learning how to use it properly, correctly. Because we have to train the heart in this business of restraint and abandoning, of cultivation and maintaining. And the active application of this energy that we use in the service of that must be understood correctly, because it doesn't come to us so naturally. Not because we're innately bad or flawed or somehow, you know, we can't do this, but simply because causes and conditions and habits create a situation where we dwell in distraction, in avoidance, in indulgence, however we do, you know, however we go to our habitual unwholesome habits. These are just habits. We've become habituated to these. And so we can become unhabituated. We can habituate other things. This is the core meaning of right effort: to unhook from our addictions and to substitute wholesome addictions for the unwholesome ones. But because it so goes against our acculturated grain, it takes energy to do that. And we have to be very cognizant, very aware of how we apply that energy. So the rest of the talk today will be more about how we apply energy as opposed to right effort. I just wanted to speak of right effort by way of context. So the rest of the talk, I'll be using that context of right effort, right, to as the framework for speaking about balanced energy and unbalanced energy that we might use in support of that. And learning the skillful use of energy in the metta practice or in any meditative practice is essential so that we do feed the wholesome and starve the unwholesome rather than the other way around. I once, very early in my practice, I asked Upandita, quite naively actually, because he was always talking about make more effort. I once asked him, can you have too much effort? And he immediately, and I was very surprised, he said, oh, of course you can. It can be dangerous if you apply it incorrectly, he said. And it's true. Too much effort in the wrong way and things go very much out of balance in the practice. So we have to be careful about how we use our energy. Especially since we have to use energy a lot in the practice. In the suttas, this factor of energy or effort show up again and again and again. It's the commonest factor in the 37 wings of awakening. And it runs like a golden thread through all the teachings. The Buddha talked about it over and over and over. And here in Burma, we hear all the time from the Sayadaws about the importance of diligence in the practice. Often with the awareness of the preciousness of this opportunity to practice and the closeness of death. All the time, for example, when we chant the refuges and precepts when Sayadaw is here, he ends with this intonation, apamadena sampadeta. And what that means is strive on with diligence. And these are the Buddha's last words to his disciples when he was dying. Yeah, I think this is really interesting because Buddhas don't use language carelessly the way most of us do. And when you're dying, your very last words, it's like, what's really important to emphasize, to get across? You know, you can imagine all the disciples gathered around and the Buddha dying, and he's, okay, what's the last thing to leave them with? Apamadena sampadeta. And it makes me smile, actually, when I think of these words, because my preceptor and teacher Upandita used to intone them, and I just, Mambhapya, you know, it instilled in all of us this incredible diligence. In the suttas, too, it's there are some very sometimes funny stories in the suttas. There's one in the Sutta Nipata, which I like a lot, because there were a bunch of young monks, and they were living, it said, carelessly. And the Buddha noticed this, and he asked one of his chief disciples, Mahamoggallana, to, you know, as we say in English, awaken the fear of God in them, awaken the fear of the Buddha in them. So Mahamoggallana, with his divine powers, he touched the little house that they were living in with his toe and shook the whole house. And they came all running out with big eyes, you know, it's like, ah, you know, terrified of, oh, we're going to die. And then The Buddha spoke these verses to them as they came piling out of this house that was shaking, afraid of their, you know, that their lives were in danger. And the Buddha says, see, your lives are in danger. They are. So arouse yourselves. The king of death is about to catch you. Sit up. What good is sleeping? You know, he gives them this whole kind of rousing talk. So we hear Appamadena Sampadeta from the Saitas. We read these stories in the suttas. And yes, fine, it's true. Time is precious. Life is short. And we're instructed that since we're all faced with death, we should, you know, practice as though our hair is on fire. But please don't take that instruction as the reason to try too hard, because that's completely counterproductive. Heroic effort can easily become unbalanced, leading to crashing and burning rather than onward leading practice. So, finding relaxed diligence, relaxed heroic effort. I mean, that seems like an oxymoron, but it's completely attainable. Finding relaxed diligence that's the optimal use of our energy is a big, big part of the art of the practice and what we learn in the practice as it goes up and down and up and down and up and down. Effort is the one of the meditative faculties that we most directly cultivate. It's the most active of the five faculties. It's the one that we have the most, kind of, we don't have any control over it, but we cultivate it actively, which is why it's easy to overdo it. Because while we need that heroic effort, at the same time, we absolutely have to have a light touch. So, Appamadena Sampadeta, with a light touch, is what we have to cultivate. Not to be afraid of dying and then, you know, getting all tight in our practice, but to rest back in that understanding of impermanence. Now is what we have. And how to use this now in the most balanced way. Munindraji used to say a lot, short moments many times. So resting back in these short moments, now, 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 maintaining a balanced effort. So the way we go out of balance with the use of effort is determined a lot by our cultural conditioning. I don't know about any of you who grew up in Europe, but I grew up reading about the little train that could. It was one of my favorite books as a child, about this little train that had to climb a hill and I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, and making a lot of effort to get to the top of the hill. And when the train got to the top of the hill, you know, it was a great triumph. Effort, 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 effort. And then there's a very famous Zen story. So somebody went to a Zen master and said, if I work really hard, how soon can I be enlightened? You know, really on fire with the practice. And the Zen master looked him up and down and said, 10 years. 10 years. 10 years, really? What if I try really, really, really hard? The Zen master looked him up and down and said, 20 years. And the fellow said, no, 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 wait, listen. If I really, really try in the best possible, 30 years. And that whole ardent trying habit that we all have can be such an integral part of our psyche that we don't even notice it. We don't see it at all. So being able to identify when we're doing this is the first step. Noticing unbalanced effort is essential. And it can be very subtle. For example, maybe conditions at some point in the day are not conducive to continuity. So maybe then we find ourselves sitting and walking and thinking unconsciously, not even really notice it, assuming that we have to work hard in the service of cultivating continuity and concentration. And we have to try really hard to reestablish whatever good practice we might have had a couple of hours earlier. And then we think, well, when I've reestablished that good practice, then we'll be able to really more deeply experience that perfectly open and benevolent heart. And our lives will be forever changed, you know, voila, done. Just through. And when I say it like this, it's like a cartoon, you know. But it's not much of an exaggeration of what can happen to us. And that's what prolongs our suffering, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. All of you by now have seen the ups and downs of practice. It goes well, whatever well means. It falls apart, whatever that means. You know, it goes up and down and up and down. And we think we know this. We think we, you know, we've really got it. That we can't try to make it go well. But somehow that doesn't always filter down to the heart. Somehow it stays up here as intellectual knowledge. So even after decades of practice, it can be surprisingly easy to get sucked into this kind of dynamic, that when the practice begins to go down, we make really striving effort to try to force it to go up again. And the more practice goes on, the more decades practice goes on, the harder it is to see this, the more subtle that over-efforting becomes. So, to notice in the practice, see if the practice involves an excess of subtle or not so subtle doing. So when things go into uncomfortable territory, whether it's difficult emotions or maybe unpleasant concentration states, we may notice that we try to drag experience back to where it's more comfortable. Or maybe we find ourselves vigorously manipulating what is happening, or at least trying to do that, to create a stronger experience of metta or more continuity. Or maybe when you encounter some difficulty, you find yourself groping through your meditative toolbox, looking for just the right thing to adjust, to tweak the practice here and there so it will, quote unquote, go better. It can all get very technical. And when that happens, we lose contact with what we're actually here to do, which is simply to start again Well, happy, peaceful, and cultivate metta. This practice is ridiculously simple. Of course, not easy, but really, really simple. So not to overthink it in the adjusting, in the whatever you're doing when things begin to be difficult, just notice what's happening and start again. And over-efforting, especially subtle over-efforting, is the kind of thing that often hides in plain sight. Sometimes we're even aware of it. And when we are in that case, sometimes we assume, oh yeah, no, but that's not so important. But it is. So watch yourself carefully, paying special attention to motivation. Notice the motivation behind whatever you do in the practice. Is it arising from relaxed metta mindfulness? Or is it coming from aversion or greed? Because if the motivation behind our effort is greed or aversion, no matter how subtle, all that we are doing is making more of that. So actions rooted in greed or aversion create more greed or aversion, which of course is a kind of effort that's that unwholesome effort, that counterproductive effort. So right effort and the balanced use of energy requires renunciation. It's a huge part of right effort. Specifically, the letting go of a need for an outcome. Letting go of our preferences for what the practice looks like. Letting go of wanting a particular experience. We tend in our lives to be very driven by seeking a particular outcome. It's that, you know, little train that could mind, I got to get to the top of the hill, I need to get to Nibbana, I need to get to Metta. And everything is in the service of something, some idea out there. But balanced effort and energy requires that we just rest back in how things are right now, acknowledging that with the contentment that is okay with this is what's happening right now. With the mind that is able to rest with that, and now what? Oh, cultivate metta. The nature of all conditioned phenomena is to not be controllable. That's the way samsara is. We're not doing anything wrong. Now what? Now what? Oh, may I be at ease with this anyway. And when that ease with just being able to practice in a relaxed way with whatever is arising, when that ease begins to slip, that's when our effort becomes unbalanced. And on an intensive retreat, this can be particularly noticeable right about now. You've all set aside a significant amount of time to come here to sit. You've expended a lot of effort and money to come here to sit. You've had to arrange your lives, your jobs, your families to come here to sit. We don't want to waste 1 minute of our time here. And that's wholesome, that not wanting to waste your time. Apamadena sampadeta. But when this not wanting to waste our time gets tight, when we become goal-oriented, you know, it's like we want to experience a certain thing before we leave, or we want to purify to a certain extent before we leave. We put pressure on ourselves. And there's a particular kind of tightness that comes with this, where a balanced urgency becomes a solid agenda that we feel like we're beating our head against. And we give ourselves a deadline. Oh, I only have one more week. Or three more weeks. Oh, no. And here's where the big picture can be very helpful in reminding us to maintain that balanced energy that just comes back again and again and again. The practice is a long journey. Point yourself in the right general direction and just walk one step at a time. And step by step by step, the development of metta is proceeding. And we get as far as we get in this retreat, in this life. So, it's what I said the other day. Ideals are wonderful, but they are actually concepts. Not forcing ourselves to run faster than we can walk. Not forcing ourselves to be any different than we already are. But taking what we have, the positive energy that we have, and using that in this moment just to come back. Just to cultivate metta however we can right now. And to notice if you're beginning to assess the practice. Oh, yeah, no, it's not going well, or it's going really well, or however you assess it, however you, you know, judge the practice as being successful or not successful. Be careful when these thoughts arise. Say, thank you for sharing, but who knows? Because in the middle of a retreat, we can have no idea how well the practice is going, how much the mind is being purified. Maybe we don't feel like we're connecting. Maybe we feel like we're just struggling. And we think, I'm not getting anywhere with this, oh well. That's a thought not to believe, because you don't know. Really, you don't know. Somebody told me yesterday a very inspiring story of having a really difficult time last time they came to the Metta retreat. And it felt like a continual struggle. Until maybe the last day, when metta began to be more palpable. And then they went out into their life and discovered big shifts. So obviously through that struggle, something was happening. So don't take struggle or, you know, continuous deep connection as the sign that the metta practice is working or not. Trust the process and just keep walking. You'll see when you go out what's happened to the mind. And it may surprise you. So resting in the big picture really helps that balanced effort. And recognizing imbalance comes really from a place of first acknowledging imbalance without resistance. Just as a phenomenon. So when we assess our practice, when it feels imbalanced and we think, oh no, it's not going well, just remember, all you need to do is recognize, oh, imbalance, without resistance. And that inclines to right effort. Like everything else that comes in the practice, everything else that comes up in the practice, whether it be unpleasant phenomena, difficult emotions. When we see that our effort is out of balance, don't resist that. Don't judge yourself for that. Don't try not to do it, because that's a subtle resistance in itself. You don't have to fix that. The acknowledgement and the starting again has already fixed that. You don't have to do anything more than that. Just acknowledge, oh, the effort's gotten out of balance. Hold that with metta, with that friendly attitude. It's like, oh, I've been over-striving. I've been over-efforting. I've been trying too hard. Take a breath and begin again. Well, happy, peaceful. Well, happy, peaceful. That already is the restraint. That already is feeding the wholesome. Just recognizing whatever is distracting, distancing us from the metta, without getting involved in that in any way. Let it be there. And keep dropping in this metta phrase into whatever it is. I don't know if any of you have done basic organic chemistry, but one of my memories of studying this in the lab situation is doing titrations, where you have one chemical, and it's a certain color, and you drop by drop by drop by drop, add a second compound to the first, and nothing looks like it's happening until maybe the seventh or eighth drop, suddenly the color changes. It's like that in the practice. We're actually titrating. You just drip in this phrase, this, well, happy, peaceful, whether it feels like it's connecting or not, into whatever is arising. And everything shifts eventually. So recognizing unbalanced use of energy, not resisting or judging that, but simply starting again, is one thing that's very important. It's also important to determine for yourself what's the appropriate amount of energy to expend in the service of right effort. Because there's no ideal amount of energy. I can't say to you, this is right, this is the correct amount and this is too much, or that's too little. For each of us, the ideal amount of energy to use varies from day to day, from moment to moment, and the correct amount for me may not be the correct amount for you, and vice versa. And it can shift from, you know, moment to moment, from sitting to walking to the next sitting. So if you think there is an absolute standard, and you try to exert that all the time, you'll have a hard time finding this balance. The Buddha spoke of the use of energy as, he used a beautiful metaphor of tuning a lute, tuning a musical instrument. And any of you who know or who've played a musical instrument, a stringed instrument or a wind instrument, you know how much of an art it is to tune that instrument. In the Anguttara Nikaya, there's a sutta called the Sona Sutta. And the Buddha's talking to Sona, who was a monk, but before he was a monk, he was quite a famous musician who played the veena with many, many strings. And the Buddha speaks to him saying, you know, were you skilled at playing your instrument? And he said, well, of course I was. And the Buddha talks about how, well, if your strings were too tight or too loose, could you play that instrument effectively? And he says, oh, heavens, no. And then the Buddha says, in the same way, Sona, over-aroused energy leads to restlessness. Overly slack energy leads to laziness. Thus, you should determine the right pitch for your energy. Attune the pitch of the meditative faculties to that, and there pick up your theme. You know, the Buddha very beautifully following this musical metaphor. Adjust your pitch moment to moment, just like when you're playing an instrument. It goes out of pitch, doesn't it? Now, you can't tune your guitar or your recorder or whatever you happen to be playing once and let it be at that. You have to keep adjusting it. So we have to learn to discern for ourselves and get this ear for the right pitch, the right energy pitch. Is there restlessness from too much striving? Or are we overly complacent? We need to be sensitive to our bodies, to our minds, to our experiences. And if you pay attention, you'll see for yourself what's going on, what's affecting your energy levels. So, for example, if you're at the end of the day exhausted by the practice, and there's no real underlying physical reason for that, there's a chance you're over-efforting. There's a chance there's something off in your pitch. Or maybe the opposite is happening. Maybe you're going to bed at the usual time without thinking about it, and you find yourself lying there wide awake. Well, then, you know, that's telling you, oh, okay, maybe you can keep practicing for longer. So don't follow habit, but look and see what's appropriate right now. We need to mostly just attend to the continuity of what we're doing, the continuity of repeating that phrase, and that's enough. The metta will arise on its own schedule. And while this, all the Burmese teachers, all our Saitos, are correct about the importance of effort and diligence, the quality of the energy used to establish that is really of patient, relaxed persistence, of steadfastness, rather than trying, manipulation, or manufacture. There's a beautiful quote, not in this tradition at all, but from Rumi. He says, "Your task is not to seek for love, but to merely seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it." So not to try to create metta, not to look for it, but to just keep inclining to it. And all these barriers, they're there to be seen. So this steadfastness, this relaxed diligence, it's not something we who tend to habitually try too hard are familiar with. So for the overstrivers amongst us, at first when we dial it back, when we don't try so hard, when we're just beginning to apply that right amount of energy, it can feel a little strange. Certainly just unusual. It's like, and we think, ooh, am I doing this right? This feels really strange. Some people actually just experience relief. It's like, oh, suddenly, oh, is that all I have to do? Ah. But a lot of us feel guilty or in some way ashamed. It's like, oh, this must not be right. I remember at one point in the practice hitting some bumps, some significant bumps, and intuitively I knew the right thing to do was to open it up. So I went for a walk, and I had been doing Vipassana, but I went for a walk and I just repeated some metta phrases. And the whole time I felt guilty. It's like somehow I was cheating. And the next time I saw a teacher, I reported that, and she just laughed. You know, she just said, so going in the forest and repeating the metta phrases, that was somehow wrong? I really did think that, actually. I thought, oh, I'm doing it wrong. But of course I wasn't. That was skillful means. But being so used to, you know, really forcefully trying, that felt very wrong. The thing to pay attention to is this aspect of feeding and starving. There's nothing to worry about if you're feeding the wholesome. So I went for a walk in the forest. I was cultivating metta and actually genuinely doing that. It wasn't just words. It was actually going pretty well. That's feeding the wholesome. That, by definition, is onward leading. So know if you're feeding the wholesome. Or, you know, when we exert too much effort, often what's feeding, being fed there is just an agenda of the ego. And we're, you know, we're getting tighter and tighter. And just to know that, oh, I'm feeding the unwholesome. That's enough, and it stops right there when we recognize that. Often, the moment we acknowledge that, it's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. You know, and we start again. Knowing what you're feeding and what you're starving is often enough to correct the course of the practice. So it comes back full circle to right effort, to paying attention to what we're feeding and what we're starving. Knowing that is essential. in the American Indian tradition, and there are many, many versions of this story coming from, you know, quoted, ascribed to many, many different lineages of the American Indian tradition. So I don't know which one is correct. But, you know, the version I first learned was that it was from the Navajo tradition. A grandfather speaking to his grandson, saying, "You know, I've got two wolves inside. One is bright, light, love, kindness, a white wolf. The other is judgment, despair, hatred, envy, ill will, craving, the dark wolf, and they're fighting." And the grandson says, "Well, Grandpa, which one wins?" And the grandfather says, "The one I feed." So feeding and starving, many traditions understand this. Feed the wholesome, starve the unwholesome. Or at least just don't feed the unwholesome. I've just spent almost an hour spinning many words around that one sentence. But that's the crux of it. Cultivate the wholesome, refrain from the unwholesome, purify the mind. This is the verse from the Dhammapada we've already offered several times. That's right effort. So no matter what's arising, if we simply keep patiently doing the practice through all those ups and downs, metta will inevitably arise and become consolidated effortlessly and by itself. So I want to end today with another verse from the Dhammapada that I like very much. It speaks to the big picture. This is Dhammapada 122. The Buddha says, "Do not ignore the effect of right action, saying, 'This will come to nothing.' Just as drop by drop the water jar is filled, so in time the wise become replete with good." So through this practice of metta bhavana, may you polish and maintain right effort, using energy in a balanced way, to cultivate loving kindness with ease, thus in time becoming replete with good. Thank you for your practice, and thank you for your kind attention, everybody.